Editor Howard Weaver lays out the facts of the matter before the Juneau World Affairs Council. At 9, an American mosque pays tribute to a community that refused to be defeated by a hate crime. Alaska Report is next at 9:30. Senator Lisa Murkowski and Fran Ulmer discuss the work of the U.S. Arctic Research Commission. Tonight on...
Good afternoon, Juneau. It's about 5 seconds before 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore going to be your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Great lineup of guests today. Lots of good information for us. Rich Anderson, the president of the Juneau Amateur Radio Club, is going to be dropping in to tell us about Ham Radio Field Day. It's coming up this weekend. This is Gustavus' 100th year anniversary, and Kim Hecox, an author and photographer, is going to be in here, and we'll hear a little music by a Gustavus artist. We'll also be listening to some information about a thing called A Madman Affair. It's coming up on Sunday, and this is a really interesting fundraiser for an organization called Groundworks that is trying to drill wells in Africa. So Joe Wolfenstein will be in to tell us about that. And it's Concert and Food Truck Friday. Ariel Rolfe from the Juneau Arts and Community Council will be coming in to tell us about Food Truck Friday. So stay tuned. Right now it's time for National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus. The Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission and its member tribes, Warm Springs, Yakima, Umatilla, and Nez Perce, have completed the first update to their comprehensive fisheries restoration plan. KWSO's Will Robbins reports the update addresses a host of issues and opportunities that have arisen since the original plan was written almost 20 years ago.
The plan is called Waikanish Mi Wakishwit, meaning Spirit of the Salmon. The update describes the progress and needed modifications to the institutional recommendations in the original plan. It also identifies...
You're invited to the hottest party of the summer. Going excellent...
This is National Native News. I'm Sarah Gustavus. The Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission and its member tribes, Warm Springs, Yakima, Umatilla, and Nez Perce, have completed the first update to their comprehensive fisheries restoration plan. KWSO's Will Robbins reports the update addresses a host of issues and opportunities that have arisen since the original plan was written almost 20 years ago.
The plan is called Waikanish Mi Wakishwit, meaning Spirit of the Salmon. The update describes the progress and needed modifications to the institutional and technical recommendations in the original plan. It also identifies and addresses several new challenges and recommendations 18 years into the 25-year plan. Sarah Thompson is a public information officer for the Columbia River Intertribal Fish Commission. She talks about some of the challenges of that plan.
Today we're dealing with things like climate change and unmanaged predation, water quality. Those are just a few of the issues that weren't originally in the 1995 plan, but we've taken on here in the updated plan that we released.
The plan was originally developed in 1995 to provide a framework for restoring fish species such as salmon and lamprey, as well as sturgeon in upriver areas above Bonneville Dam on the Columbia River. In Oregon, I'm Will Robbins for National Native News.
The death of a young Lakota woman on the Rosebud Sioux Reservation continues to raise questions in her community more than a month after her passing. As Jim Kent reports, family and friends never expected to hear that she died as a result of a high-speed police pursuit.
Featherway Cologne was a star athlete and a musician during her high school years. She was also featured in the award-winning video More Than That, produced by Todd County High School students in response to A Hidden America, Children of the Plains, Diane Sawyer's critical observation of life on South Dakota reservations. So when word filtered out that Feather Ray had died after a high-speed pursuit by Rosebud Sioux Tribal Police in the early morning hours of May 1st, members of her small, close-knit community of Mission were shocked. Jackie Colomb is curious why the local media wasn't informed of the pursuit that killed her granddaughter, but she's more concerned about why the police were chasing Feather Ray, why she wasn't allowed to see Feather Ray before her body was sent to Sioux Falls for an autopsy, and why the need for an autopsy. Feather Ray's family is also being denied access to her cell phone as well as to her vehicle, which a Lakota spiritual leader needs to visit in order to complete a traditional burial ceremony. According to relatives, Featherie Colomb's reluctance to stop her vehicle may have been linked to her fear of police. Jackie Colomb says her granddaughter was involved in an incident during her elementary school years that resulted in a Rosebud Sioux Tribal police officer losing his job and doing prison time. Calls to the Rosebud Sioux Tribe's chief of police regarding the incident have not been returned. The FBI, which is investigating Feather Ray's death, has no comment. For National Native News, I'm Jim Kent.
The Chickasaw Cultural Center in Oklahoma was recently nominated for recognition as a state tourism destination in the Oklahoma Newspaper's Reader's Choice Awards. The center opened in 2010 and shares Chickasaw culture and traditions with visitors. The Chickasaw Nation's Cultural Center has received other awards in recent years and made lists of top destinations in publications like CNN. The Cultural Center is located in Sulphur, Oklahoma. During this month in 1972, the Indian Education Act was signed into law. The legislation addressed needs of American Indian and Alaska Native students. It included additional funding and created the Office of Indian Education, which is now the Bureau of Indian Education, or BIE. For National Native News, I'm Sarah Gustavus.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation in Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com. The Convention and Tourism Department of the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce provides convention and event planning services for Native American organizations. Information at ahcnm.org. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
6.5 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. This is Juneau Afternoon. Pat Moore, your host today. My first guest is the president of the Juneau Amateur Radio Club. Rich Anderson is here, and I understand he's going to tell us about something called Ham Radio Field Day. Rich, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Pat. It's good to be here.
Yeah. So what's Field Day?
Oh, Field Day. It's put on by the ARRL. It comes around once a year. We run it the fourth weekend in June, and roughly about 35,000 members across the U.S. Get together, and basically it's one big picnic. It's one big contest. It's one big festival. There's a lot of food. People just have a good time. We try to make a lot of contacts. One of the big things we do about Field Day is it helps us to be ready. We actually have a 100-foot tower trailer that we end up putting up. We want to make sure that we stay good for doing that. We don't want to get rusty. So if we ever have a need for an emergency or something like that, we can stay sharp. And then we can also be sharp operating the radio and stuff. It's a really good time. You build a lot of camaraderie, and there's some really cool people there.
So, Rich, a little bit about what ham radio is. I mean, you talk to people around the world, right?
Oh, yeah,
with radio.
In fact, it's you're probably wondering, Pat, why would anyone want to be in ham radio? Well, for one thing, it's fun. If anyone, you don't have to be an electronic genius or anything like that to get into ham radio. A lot of people, there are people like to have another form of communication. Back in the day, everyone thinks of ham radio as being, okay, you're going to be sitting there keying on a Morse code key and, keying away ... And you're thinking, boy, who's going to use that nowadays? Well, even that older form of communication is still used nowadays. I know a number of people, even in our club, that diligently every day will make 2 or 3 contacts a day across the world. And actually, that's one of the more reliable forms of communication, where other forms of communication get through, that the old form, we call it CW, can get through.
Now, I understand you have to have a license in order to be a ham radio operator?
Yes, you do. You have to be licensed. You have to go through the FCC. Anyone just can't go and do it. There's 3 different forms of license. One is a technician license, which can get you to where you can basically you can talk on the local repeater system that we have here in Juneau, which is really cool. With a little handheld repeater, once you get your license, you can get on the repeater network and, hey, say you go out the road or something, your cell phone doesn't have coverage, you can, you know, you can get on your handheld and talk, communicate with someone. The second part of the license is, and oh yeah, by the way, Pat, these aren't administered by the FCC. It's regular club members that work under the, you know, under the oversee. They're overseen by the FCC. The next form of license is the general class, and the general class, what that does is that opens you to HF, where you can communicate all over the world. That's way far, a lot more than, you know, the local repeater system. And that's where it really gets fun. People, that's what we're going to be doing with Field Day this week, and we'll be making contacts all across the U.S. and Canada. And, you know, in other contests and when other people are making contacts, they, people can talk to, you know, South Africa, get with people in Japan, you know, all over the place. But that's what opens the door to the really fun stuff. Now, if you really get ambitious, and probably most of the members of our club have the extra class license, what that does is that's also HF, but that gives you a number of more bands. It gives you more rights. You can't just be on like one, you know, it just opens up the door to have more ability to make more contacts on different frequencies and bands and stuff. But it's a very challenging. It keeps you thinking. It's a good hobby. We have people that are on into their later years of life. We had people that are in their teens. We have a few members in our club that I won't say names or ages, but they've been around for an awful long time. And some of these guys got their licenses, I think, even before they were 10 years old. And some of them had their licenses for probably over 70 some years. You know, so that's pretty dang good. That's back in the days of spark gap and all that stuff and tubes. Now everything's, you know, computer and digital and stuff. But we still have some diehards that like pulling out their old rigs and making contacts.
Rich, you mentioned Morse code. I had heard that they had that you no longer had to do Morse code to get a license, a ham radio license. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, that was one of the things that really scared people along the way. You know, it's like, gee, how am I going to learn Morse code? You know, I can. People say I can talk, but, you know, it's, I don't know about that code. Well, that's not a requirement now. But there are people that want to go use it, and there are people that in the past, you know, had to take Morse code, and, you know, they still use it. But, you know, like even myself, that's one of the things that I would like to do is, as time goes on, to get more in and learning more about Morse code, because it's one of those things that it's just like, it's unique. You can be, you know, communicating with someone and, you know, you really don't know what someone's saying unless you understand the Morse code. And it's really reliable. It can get through when anything else can't get through.
Rich, about Field Day now, where does this event happen?
Okay, well, it's going to be happening at the Hagavig Fire Training Center. It's out near where you get your driver's licenses and stuff.
Okay.
I'm trying to remember the name of the road. It's over at 2601 Sherwood Lane at the Hagavig Regional Training Station. Anyway, we're going to be setting up tonight, getting our tower trailers set up and everything. Tomorrow we're going to start operating at 10 o'clock, and we're going to be running 24 hours till Sunday the next day. Now, what we're going to be doing is from like 12 to 2, we're inviting, we're going to be having a potluck. You know, this club's going to be supplying all burgers and hot dogs, you know, all the stuff. And a lot of the members are going to be bringing, dishes to pass and stuff like that, and it's always a really big feast. Last couple of years we've had really good weather, and tomorrow looks like it's going to be pretty good, and we're encouraging people in the community to come on out, see what we're all about. One way to find us is if you're heading out the road on Egan, you look toward the fire training center, you'll see that 100-foot tower. Just follow the tower on the left side of the road as you're heading out the road, and you'll see us. But what's really cool about it is we'll have people operating the radios, and, you know, if someone wanted to come out there and say, gee, you know, can I operate a radio, we could actually put people on the radio. As long as you're with a licensed person on that radio, you could try your hand at ham radio and kind of get a feel for what we're all about. We have some great people that are trade people that are going to be putting on some training seminars and stuff like that. And we're also going to be doing a licensing test tomorrow for people that we get people from across Southeast Alaska and local that they'll actually come up here for field day just so they can take their licensing exam, whether it's a technician, general, extra, whatever. And this way they get a chance to meet the gang that's here in Juneau, and they can go home with their license and, you know, be able to enjoy the benefits of their ham radio license.
Rich Anderson, president of the Juneau Amateur Radio Club. Amateur Radio Field Day starts at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. There's a potluck from 12 o'clock until 2 o'clock. Everybody's invited to drop out any time during that 24-hour period and take a look at the operation, maybe even take a shot at talking into a ham radio microphone to somebody on the other end of the circuit. So, Rich, thank you very much for filling us in on the event. Anything to add?
Oh, just a big thank you, Pat, for and letting me come in here and give my spiel on the Ham Radio Club. I'll tell you one thing, Pat, before I go, I just want to let you know that anywhere out there, this is probably one of the best-kept secrets in town. There's a lot of things you can learn, and everyone has a lot of fun, and it's something that once you get your license, you're thinking, why the heck didn't I do this sooner? Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Rich.
You're invited to the hottest party of the summer. Join Excellent Radio at the Twisted Fish for Fish Fest, July 3rd at 9 p.m. for a live outdoor soundstage, featuring music from New Orleans funk band The Business and hometown heroes DJ Astronomar and Shorthand. With fireworks to follow, this is a 21 and over event and fundraiser for public radio in Juneau.
This is Bird Note. A lilting, brightly whistled song erupts from a source hidden by the leaves of a tall alder tree. The song continues, but where the heck is the singer? At last, a bird appears atop the alder, still singing. It's a stocky orange bird with a black head, a large, thick bill, and bold white blazes on its black wings. You've just found a male black-headed grosbeak. Its song rings out from May well into summer, one of the most distinctive bird voices of the West and Southwest. The song has been described as that of a drunken or scat-singing robin. It does slur some of its notes, and the song does have a syncopated feel to it. Why not draw your own conclusion? Here's the lovely but more methodical song of the American Robin. And now, the up-tempo performance of the black-headed grosbeak. Listen for the rollicking song of the black-headed grosbeak this summer, especially in streamside woods. Its singer could have come all the way from southern Mexico. Writers for Bird Note include Bob Sundstrom, Todd Peterson, Dennis Paulson, Ellen Blackstone, and Chris Peterson. Our producer is John Kessler. I'm Michael Stein.
It's 17 minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. My next guest comes to us from the beautiful town of Gustavus, and he's not there, and we'll have to call him back. So we'll have a little music, and then we'll catch him up on the phone here in just a second. Yeah, a little slack key guitar there to cover up our technical difficulties. I think we have Kim Hecox with us. Kim, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, it worked this time. Okay, good enough. Welcome to the show, Kim.
Thank you.
Yeah, a couple of things. You're on Gustavus, and I understand tomorrow is the beginning of a big doings out there with the 100th year anniversary, right?
It is. Actually, the celebration begins tonight and then goes for the next 2 days.
Ah, well, Gustavus people know how to throw a party, I think. The second thing, of course, is what we really want to focus on here today, and that is that you've recently published a book about John Muir in Alaska.
I have, yes.
I'm not sure everybody knows, but Muir came up, I think, in the 1890s, or 1790s.
He first came through Alaska in 1879 and then again in 1880. Both of those involved long canoe journeys.
Yeah. This was back when we were still a military protectorate with the headquarters out of Sitka. And I understand he came in and talked the Tlingit Indians into building a canoe.
Right. He arrived at Fort Wrangell, today's Wrangell, in 1879. And he hooked up with a Presbyterian missionary there, S. Hall Young. And Young had been dispatched by Sheldon Jackson to go Christianize the Tlingits, especially up north in the Chilkat country. And so S. Hall Young was enamored with John Muir. Muir was 10 years older than Young, and Muir was a naturalist and a writer from California. He had come to find the glaciers of Alaska. And Young and Muir became friends. And in the autumn of that year, 1879, they took off on a canoe journey with a dual purpose. For Muir, to find the glaciers of Glacier Bay. He had heard about this Bay of Great Glaciers, this fabled place. And for Young, it was to head up to the Chilkat country and deliver his sermons.
Kim, do we have an idea of how it was that Muir heard about Glacier Bay?
Right. He heard about Glacier Bay from the map drawn by Lieutenant Joseph Whidbey, who sailed with Captain George Vancouver on HMS Discovery in 1794. So 85 years earlier, George Vancouver had come through this country with the HMS Discovery and HMS Chatham, his two ships. And they had mapped Icy Strait region and Glacier Bay, which was then all glacier and no bay. The massive glacier that filled the bay then was just in the beginnings of catastrophic retreat. And they described this massive ice front, this polar front, they called it. And Muir had, or was familiar with, a copy of Whidbey's, what they call a memory map, that he had drawn. And Muir knew there must be massive glaciers in Alaska that he wanted to see for himself and how they worked to help prove his theories of glaciation in California's Sierra Nevada.
And what the theories? What
well, the theories... The theory was fascinating in that Josiah Whitney, the head geologist of the state of California at the time, had pronounced that Yosemite Valley in particular, but much of the Sierra Nevada, the beautiful mountain range that runs down the length of California, had been primarily created by catastrophic downfaulting, earthquakes, these granite blocks moving in vertical opposition to each other at tremendous rates of speed during earthquakes, right? And so Muir comes along as an itinerant worker and takes up residence in Yosemite Valley. And he's about 30 years old at the time. And he spends the whole 1870s hiking Yosemite Valley and the High Sierra, all outside the valley, up into the high peaks. He finds a lot of these little pocket glaciers that still exist in California at the time. And he finds these striations, these grooves in the rock, in the granitic bedrock, all these parallel grooves, and he goes, whoa, what could cause that? Can ice carve rock? No. But if ice picks up pieces of rock embedded in the ice in the flanks of the glaciers and drags those rocks against the bedrock, you'll get these grooves. And you give any geologic process enough time, what Charles Lyell in the Principles of Geology published in 1830, he called it deep time, you give any process enough time, and it's going to shape entire landscapes. So Muir said, he said, glaciers created this landscape. And Whitney went, what? Who's this guy? This itinerant worker, this Muir ignoramus, this sheep herder. So Muir came up to Alaska to prove his theories, and he turned out to be right.
Now, while he was here, I know he wrote articles that were published, I think, in the San Francisco newspapers.
Right.
And people read these, and I think that was probably the first time that anyone understood that there was much more up here other than just a wall of ice.
Right, exactly. He wrote for the San Francisco newspapers, the San Francisco Bulletin. He wrote for a magazine called the Overland Monthly. This was mostly in the 1870s and early 1880s. And he basically took our national image of Alaska, which was that of an icebox or a wasteland.
Uh-huh.
Many people had opposed the purchase of Alaska in 1867. That was masterminded by William Seward, Secretary of State at the time. 12 years later, 1879, John Muir comes up here and writes lyrically and beautiful about Alaska, and he changed the national impression of Alaska to one of a shimmering beauty, which was the way it stood until basically the Klondike Gold Rush in 1897-98.
Yeah. Big changes then. So Muir was here. It's interesting about the dates because the discovery of gold in Juneau is in 1880.
Yes.
That's when Juneau and Harris came up here from Sitka.
Exactly. In his second trip of 1880 in the canoe, the 25-foot-long canoe in 1880 with Lot Tyeen, the great Tlingit, as the captain, Muir was in the Gastineau Channel area, and he was a very keen amateur geologist, and he said, this is gold country. And he reported that in Sitka at the end of his trip in 1880, his second great canoe journey. They went up north, Icy Strait, Taylor Bay. He had his big adventure on the glacier, Brady Glacier, with the little dog Stikine. Went into Glacier Bay, explored what would become his namesake glacier, Muir Glacier. Go down in Port Frederick. They portaged through to Tenneke Inlet, went down through Peril Strait to Sitka, where Muir said goodbye to his canoe mates, and he reported to the authorities there the possibility of gold. And those authorities were the same ones that had dispatched Harris and Juneau into that region, and they found gold there in the Juneau region, of course, just a couple months after Muir had been there.
So, Kim, this book that you've written about Muir, we've been discussing history and the facts and the times. There's another element to this that I wanted to briefly discuss with you, and that is I had not realized until I started reading the quotes that you had selected and some of the things that you say in your book about Muir. The guy was a real poet. He described himself as, what was it, a poetica? What was that phrase that he used to describe himself?
He would not have described himself as a poet because he knew what a real poet was, like Walt Whitman. He did not describe himself as a scientist. He only had 2 years of college. He knew who credentialed scientists were, and he held them in deep regard. He one time described himself to Robert Underwood Johnson, his editor at Century Magazine, as a poetical geologist.
There you go. That was the phrase.
Poking fun at himself. He says, I'm really not a serious scientist. I'm not a peer-reviewed scientist. I don't write scientific papers. I'm not a professor. But, man, he had such intuitive knowledge. He didn't just learn about nature. He learned from nature. And that's why he trumped Josiah Whitney with the great glacial debate in California, because he was out there on the ground. He was ground-truthing. He knew what he was looking at.
We had a wonderful experience this last winter. We had a guest here in Juneau who is from Yosemite National Park and does John Muir live.
Right.
I can't think of his name just
offhand. Lee Stetson.
Yeah, that's him. I went to his presentation. It was really wonderful. He really brought Muir to life for us, and I was very grateful because I knew of the man's writings, but I didn't know of him.
Right, and with that Scottish brogue, Muir always considered himself Scotch, a Scotch-American. I think one of the reasons he was able to be the critic of American industry and commerce just running over nature in its path is that he was not fully Americanized. He was always identified with Scotland through his whole life, where he lived his first 11 years. And so that enabled him to look through at America with a different prism, and I think that was valuable in a certain regard. And he wrote lyrically, like you said. I think I would describe him as a lyrical writer, not so much as a poet.
I would agree with the characterization. Fascinating. How can we read? We can read a lot of Muir in your book. Can we find him in the original?
All of his original books are still in print, all 6 or 7 or 8 of them. You know, the mountains of California are national parks. My Yosemite, they're all still in print. Just Google John Muir books, and you'll have the time of your life.
Now, the title of your book is?
John Muir and the Ice That Started a Fire.
Yes, the Ice That Started a Fire. Now, will you be doing anything during the 100th year anniversary this weekend? Are you doing like a reading or anything like that?
The 100th anniversary of the founding of Gustavus, formerly called Strawberry Point, when the settlers first arrived here in the summer of 1914. I'm not doing any readings, but I am working as a keyboardist up on stage playing the keyboard for some young ladies, some young teenagers, that they're singing a song they wrote themselves called Southeast Paradise. It's about living in Gustavus.
Wow. So this is just one of many events that are going on, and I wanted to make sure that everybody knows that there is a ferry that will leave here at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, and it will leave Gustavus at 12:15 on Sunday. So you can go out to Gustavus at 7 o'clock, stay overnight, and get back here. You'll be back in Juneau by 4:30 in the afternoon. Wonderful way to take part in this wonderful event. Gustavus has an annual party, but this one is absolutely special because it is the centennial celebration.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everybody's excited about. The weather is beautiful here. The town is 100 different shades of green. Come on out. We're having a nice time out here, and we're always welcoming of visitors. So
excellent.
Join us.
We're going to go out of this with a little bit of music by an artist from Gustavus. Justin Smith plays blues guitar, and he's doing a little of his very excellent stylings. Kim, thank you very, very much for filling us in on your new book, and thank you very much for alerting us to some of the events in the 100th year anniversary party on Gustavus this weekend.
A pleasure. Thank you.
You betcha. See you later.
All right. Bye-bye.
With KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We're in the middle of Juneau afternoon. It's time now for Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 27th of June, 2014. It's the birthday of Alice McDermott, born Brooklyn, 1953, grew up on Long Island in an Irish Catholic family. She is still a practicing Catholic. She said, "It's getting a little bit more hip to be Catholic. For me, having characters who are part of a faith then allows me to talk about how that faith either works or fails them without having to attack the institution." She's been a finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for three of her books so far, That Night at Weddings and Wakes, and After This. Her most recent novel, Someone, set in the Brooklyn of her parents' generation, a Brooklyn before World War II. It's the birthday of the poet Lucille Clifton, born in Depew, New York, 1936, went to Howard University on scholarship, who published her first book, Good Times, in 1969, while raising six children. Her opening poem in Good Times begins, "In the inner city, or like we call it, home, we think a lot about uptown and the silent nights and the houses straight as dead men and the pastel lights, and we hang on to our no place, happy to be alive." It's the birthday of Helen Keller, born in Tuscumbia, Alabama, 1880. An illness in childhood left her blind and deaf, but she went on to Radcliffe College. She became a celebrity, became an advocate for persons with disabilities, and joined the Socialist Party, advocated for women's suffrage and for access to birth control. And it was on this day in 1844, Joseph Smith, Jr., the founder of the Mormon Church, was killed by a mob in Carthage, Illinois. 21 years before, he had been visited, he said, by an angel named Moroni, who directed him to gold plates buried in the woods on which were written the history of the Israelites, which he translated with the help of 2 seer stones, and so he wrote the Book of Mormon. He and his supporters headed west through Ohio to Missouri and then to Illinois, where they ran into trouble, and he was put in jail in Carthage, where 200 men one night broke into the jail and shot Smith and his brother Hiram to death. Here's a poem for today by David Wagner, entitled Loons Mating. Their necks and their dark heads lifted into a dawn blurred smooth by mist. The loons beside each other are swimming slowly in charmed circles, their bodies stretched underwater through ripples quivering and sweeping apart. The gray sky, now held close by the lake's mercurial threshold, whose face and underface they share in wheeling and diving tandem, rising together to swell their breasts like swans, to go breasting forward with beaks turned down and in, near shore, out of sight, behind a windbreak of birch and alder, and now the haunted, uprisen, wailing call, and again, and now the beautiful, sane laughter. Loon's Mating, a poem by David Wagner, from his collection Traveling Light, collected in New Poems, published by University of Illinois Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Just coming up on 21 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My next two guests are here to tell us about a really fun-sounding event at SALT. It's on Sunday night at 7 p.m. This is a Mad Men affair. And with me are Joe Wolfenstein and Jenny Monroe. And these are the people who dreamed this idea up. But what's also exciting about this is the reason for having the event, and that is that this is Groundworks, which is an organization that has been raising money, I guess, over the last several years to drill holes in the ground in Africa.
Well, yeah, that's one of the projects that Groundwork Opportunities is involved with, is freshwater.
So this is Joe speaking. Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, no problem. No problem. So tell me about this Mad Men affair. What's going to happen here?
So if you've ever seen the TV show Mad Men, it's all about the 1960s and an advertising agency and cocktail parties and risque men and women and fun. And so we thought it would be a really fun, interesting way to theme our party. So the party on Sunday night is definitely a 1960s cocktail affair. So dress up, because there's a costume contest, and there will be a nice prize for that.
Now, the dress up, the contest is to look like the characters on Mad Men, right?
Yeah, you can either dress after a specific Mad Men character, or you can dress to to the nines for a 1960s cocktail party.
Okay.
However you'd like, whatever the best outfit is going to receive a $100 gift certificate to Salt. So it's a pretty big prize.
Yes. Okay, and so there's also a competition to write an ad slogan, is that right?
Yeah, so we have a few different items that have been donated from great local businesses, Nugget Alaskan Outfitters, Annie Kales, and also Misty Mountain Massage. And those items will be on a table, and there will be little papers where you can come up with your best ad slogan for that specific item. Because, again, the TV show Mad Men is all about an advertising agency.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll go through all of them and pick whichever one we think is the most funny or the most creative, and the winner will then win that actual item.
Hmm. Okay. So I'm assuming if you're at Salt, you must be having dinner as well with this, or at least appetizers, right?
Yeah, there's a whole menu of appetizers available for purchase that they have designed specifically for our event. The whole restaurant is ours for the evening.
What is the menu?
Yeah,
the menu will include, but is not limited to, baby back ribs with a scotch glaze, seared scallops, sweet peppers with lamb and eggplant, tequila lime avocado grilled prawns with a mango relish, and there are several dessert options that include a toasted coconut pineapple upside-down cake and ambrosia trifle, I think.
Yeah.
So it sounds really good.
All with a cocktail, of course.
Get the
appropriate cocktail. Yeah.
Okay. There's a whole list of signature cocktails that will be featured that evening, which we're perfecting, so we'll have that unveiled at the party. And the great thing about that list of signature cocktails is that if you order drinks from that specific list, then we get the proceeds to our to go toward our project. So please drink from the signature cocktail list.
Okay, so now tell us about this project.
So we have a sustainable farm that we work very closely with in Uganda in the Masaka district, and they are phenomenal. They've put thousands of people into the middle class in Uganda because of the projects we have going on the farm. And we wanted to take it a step further. You know, a couple of years ago, we built them a pig farm, and they've been really successful with it. And my best friend and I, Michelle, she and I first started this project. We decided that we wanted to continue to work with them and keep furthering the farm. So she came up with a brilliant plan to buy this human-powered drill so that they could drill their own wells.
Hmm.
There are a million people in that region that need about 150 wells, and it costs $4,500 to pay someone else to drill a well for them. If we buy them their own drills, that takes the cost per well down to about $900. So it's a much more manageable and reasonable amount for us to raise to bring fresh water to 1 million people in their region.
So when I think of a drill for drilling water wells, I'm thinking of some kind of big piece of technical equipment with motors all over it and a drill and all that sort of stuff. This is not quite like that, right?
No, it's actually very easily disassembled. You can fit it into the bed of a pickup truck, and it's just got kind of a thing that looks like a merry-go-round. And the men or women that are operating it just push the paddles around to make the drill go down. It's really simple. It's very easy to maintain. It's very transportable. It's just perfect for this region and the amount of wells that they need.
And just like a powered drill, this one actually drills a 6-inch casing hole. So,
yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not a toy. This is real stuff. What's one of these things cost?
Well, normally they cost up around $20,000. They're manufactured locally. Well, I should say,
locally there.
Yeah,
okay.
On the continent. They're, they're manufactured just next door in Kenya by another really great organization that is called Who Lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a great way to support another organization in Africa. So they're usually around $20,000. We were able to negotiate a little bit down to $16,000. So we got a good deal on it. But we are attempting to raise overall initially $45,000 so that we can pay for extra parts, for maintenance, for drilling the first few wells, etc. And then we'll continually fundraise for however long it takes to get those 150 wells in there.
Have either of you actually been to the Ugandan farm?
Yeah, I go every year.
Ah.
I am very involved. I consider them family, so they're very, very close and important to me.
Wonderful.
So the Mad Men Affair is being held on Sunday, June 29th. It's at SALT at 7 p.m. The tickets cost $20.
Yep.
Okay, and that $20 plus a portion of the bar goes mm-hmm. toward your funding for Groundworks.
Yeah, and we'll also have a 50-50 raffle that okay. evening, so we'll make some money from the raffle. And don't forget, if you purchase the ticket in advance with us, so by either calling me, going to SALT, or going to McGivney's, then you do get a free pint of Alaskan brewed beer with your ticket.
So, Joe, give us your phone number so we can call you immediately and get online for the free beer.
It is 907-612-1551.
Outstanding. Mm-hmm. So a great menu of appetizers, an ad slogan competition. Now, I understand we have one more thing we have to cover, and that is there is a trivia contest.
Yes.
Yes. Now, what's the deal on this trivia contest?
So we are going to give you all a trivia question, and it...
Everyone whip out a pencil and a piece of paper.
Yeah.
Write this down.
It's specific to Eastern Africa, to Uganda, so... we're going to give you this trivia question. The first person to research and bring us the answer at the event
okay.
gets a prize.
So we should emphasize this is not Call the Station, which we do quite often with the answer. That's not what we're doing here. They're going to ask you the trivia question on the air here, and this is the only place you'll hear the question.
Yes, the
and
only
then
place.
You have to bring the answer to the event on Sunday night at 7 o'clock at SALT.
Mm-hmm.
And the first person who turns it in basically wins that portion of the trivia contest.
Yeah, and the prize is a voucher for two to go whale watching with dolphin jet boat tours.
Wow. Okay, mm-hmm. Nice prize. All right, so what is
Jenny's
the trivia
give us
question?
That question?
Jenny?
Okay, the trivia question is, the Ugandan flag features six stripes in three colors. What do the colors represent? What do each of the three colors represent?
Okay. So repeat the question
okay.
one more time.
The Ugandan flag features six stripes in three colors. What do each of the three colors represent?
Okay. So you have to have three items in your answer in order to qualify.
Yes.
Okay. One, each color that appears on the flag mm-hmm. represents some specific thing.
Yes.
And that's what the trivia question is asking. Okay. And again, don't call the station with your answer. This is not an on-the-air prize. Sunday, June 29th at SALT at 7 p.m. at the Mad Men Affair, you present the answer to this question. If you're first in line, then basically you've just won a whale-watching trip with dolphin.
Yes. And there are tons of other prizes in case you're worrying about not winning. We've got prizes from Island Pub, Heritage Coffee, The Hangar, The Imperial.
Annie Kales.
Like we have prizes from a bunch of local businesses. So don't worry. Plenty of opportunities to just win a free door prize.
Yeah. Joe, Jenny, thank you so much. A great event, a great, wonderful purpose for the event, to raise money to buy this drilling machine, which will allow hand drilling of wells in the Ugandan farm and maybe give some of those million people access to their own water supply.
That's right.
Thank you so much for coming on the show and for alerting us to this possibility.
Thank you.
The clinic is closed and you or a loved one don't feel well, or you have a health-related question that can't wait. What do you do? Here's the solution. Starting July 1st, Search will have a free after-hours nurse triage line for our patients in Juneau. Search's free after-hours service is available by calling 1-800-613-0560. For life-threatening emergencies, please call 911.
This message brought to you by Search, your partner in health.
As June 30th approaches and the close of our fiscal year, we want to remind you that we'll be drawing for an iPad Air on Tuesday morning. You have until the end of the day on Monday to get your name in the hat. If you're a sustaining member or made a gift this June, you're automatically entered. To be eligible without making a gift, just come by the station Monday by 4 p.m. and we'll get you taken care of. All of us at KTOO, KRNN, and KXLL want to thank you for your generosity this year. You make public media in Juneau possible.
The food hour here. They're going to feed me finally. It's 10 minutes to 4, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting your Juneau afternoon today. My next two guests are here to tell us about some of the great event that is going on just across the street from us. Through the summer, the Jack provides us with Food Truck Friday, And I have two guests. Ariel is here, and Isaac from one of the food trucks who brought samples. I'm all for this. Isaac is normally hiding out behind the counter over at Cuppa, which opened up here. I think we interviewed when Cuppa was first coming along, right way back in the dim mists of antiquity when there wasn't a Cuppa so much. Anyway, and Ariel, you're here to kind of tell us about the whole program of Food Truck Friday and also the music on the fly as well.
Oh.
So, you don't have to do that if you don't want to. It's all right.
I can
they
try.
Said you might want to talk about music on the fly anyway.
All
so,
right.
So, Ariel, tell us what all is happening, first of all, today.
Sure, yeah. So today we've got Food Truck Friday going. The vendors show up at 4, the food, and we have artists and local organizations that come and provide information on what they do. And that starts at 4 o'clock, and then we have live music starting at 5:30. We've got C. Scott Fry, Tony Tang, and 5 o'clock Charlie lined up for tonight. So it should
music.
Be a full
okay.
set.
Yeah,
yeah. Okay. Full sets and a lot of fun. And, yeah, that's kind of the overall.
Uh-huh. So other than fabulous hand-dashed ice cream, is it dashed or what do you call
churned.
It? Churned. Okay. Hand-churned ice cream. What else is on the menu today?
Yeah, we've got Pucker Wilson, of course, our standard food
He's kind of like
guy.
Permanently set up out there. Yeah, okay.
And then we've got Breezy Street Fair. They're going to be serving grilled Gastineau pizza, which is, I guess, one of the local favorites with smoked salmon. And then Sweet Sullivan's will have their cupcakes, which are pretty awesome. And then we've got fry bread, and that's for food.
Uh-huh. So this is like starting at 4:30, right? Is when most of them open up?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah,
that's when it starts
okay.
to really start
right.
to
okay.
percolate.
Yeah. I noticed Puckett Wilson's is open right now. I
they
saw
are.
When
yep.
I pulled into the station at 3, they were starting to serve ribs across the counter and
oh,
stuff.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Anyway, so you brought, I see two containers over here.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. Isaac is always a welcome guest.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
What do we have?
Right now we have a rhubarb sorbet.
Oh, no, this is your signature. This is what started this whole thing with Cuppa. You were at, what was the event? It was the farmer's market last
right.
year kind of thing. And you showed up there with this rhubarb sorbet.
Yes, actually Mark Wheeler, the owner, he showed up.
And you were only there for about like 7 seconds and you were sold out. I mean, the word got around on this rhubarb sorbet.
Yes,
it was incredible stuff. Yeah.
And I keep getting asked for the recipe, but that is a close guarded secret.
That's right. That's right. You can tell us, but then you'd have to kill us,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Okay. All right. And the other is?
Sweet corn.
Sweet
corn.
Yes, sir. We're expanding on some of the summer flavors.
You all do some really weird stuff with ice cream. And the really weird thing is that it's good stuff.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you had something with onions here a couple of weeks
that.
Ago.
Caramelized onion.
Yeah, and there was a guy came up to the counter. I was there getting some other ice cream, and there was a guy came up to the counter. He's raving about this stuff. So I said, I got to try a sample of it. And I was surprised. It wasn't my ice cream, let's put it that way, because I got a kind of a sweet tooth when it comes to cold things. But it was certainly an interesting flavor, and it wasn't all off-putting. It was, really good. So, Isaac, I see small spoons.
Yes.
Can we do a radio tasting here? Okay. All right, so this one is the sweet corn. Okay, I'm going to dip a little bit out, and then I'm going to pass it over here to, here you go, Ariel.
Thank you.
Grab a tasting spoon there.
Thank you.
So here we go, folks. This is on the radio, so take a close look at this. It's golden in color. This is the sweet corn ice cream.
Ooh, that is good.
That was a pocket review by Ariel. An interesting, wow. That's kind of like buttered corn on the cob,
buttery.
But cold.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, we're onto something here.
Yes, we are.
Yes,
yes
we definitely need to go from there to a little bit of the rhubarb sorbet.
Yes.
This is the that lovely pink shade.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Are you still buying rhubarb?
We are.
You are. Okay. Yes. So, folks, understand this is Cuppa. They're right down next to Sung's,
mm-hmm.
And across from the fire station, kind of.
Yes, sir.
Anyway, they'll buy your excess rhubarb. So since if you have a rhubarb plant in your yard, there's no way you're ever going to use all of it. Here we go. Mm. Oh, heaven.
I just speak summer in Juneau. It matches the sun today for sure.
Oh, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Just leave the container.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
I'll be fine now.
Oh, no, you might have to fight me.
Hey, you know where he is. I'm stuck here in the radio. You know?
All right.
Had to bring some more samples over for you.
So, do you churn the ice cream?
We have a machine that churns it, but everything's handmade from scratch from the beginning.
Okay, but, I mean, do you come up with the flavors?
Mark and I, yes, we both do.
Okay,
we,
and
calibrate.
Do you sit around and describe the process of deciding that you're going to make sweet corn ice cream?
Oh, sweet corn, that was an idea that Mark came up with, and we're expanding on summer flavor, so we're looking for inspiration anywhere we possibly can. And corn was just seemed to make sense there at the time, and we're our craziest flavor we just came up with was pickled ice cream.
Oh,
pickled
ice cream. Yes,
ice cream.
I'm having trouble. I'll try it, but I warn you, I'm having trouble with this.
Yeah.
Now, I need to mention here that not only do you have these wonderful ice creams, but you've actually got a menu.
Yes, sir.
You do lunch.
Yes.
And you have interesting hours. What are the operating hours over there at Cup?
We are open from 6 to 5.
Oh,
during the week, and then
summer hours. Different than winter. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So 6 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And then are you open on the weekends?
Yes, we are. Saturday and Sunday.
Saturday and Sunday.
Haven't been in there much on the weekends, so I'm not sure exactly how late they're open.
Okay. I should mention they have Wi-Fi, so
Wi-Fi.
You just ask at the counter for the password. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people sit there. And then the really cool thing is you've worked out a deal with Sentinel Coffee.
Mm-hmm.
And they're roasting us. They're doing a special blend for you. So
yes,
all
sir.
Of your coffees that come through there are locally roasted by a small pocket roaster that works out of Rainbow Foods.
Absolutely,
Dave Thomas, I think, is the owner of.
He's an amazing guy mm-hmm. with a very great palate, and he knows coffee for sure.
He certainly does.
He's an interesting guy.
Yeah, so he's come up with a special blend for you, which is Cup of Blend. It's the only place in the world
mm-hmm.
that you can actually get this particular coffee. So
absolutely,
step in there and have a cup with your ice cream, and mm-hmm. it works. Extremely well with all of your ice creams, I should have to say.
Yes.
But this afternoon, you will be just serving ice cream over at and you'll be there until 6:30. Is that? Right?
Yep. We close down at 7:00 actually.
7:00.
So
okay.
I mean, as long as the food's there, we'll be open till 7:00.
Food from one of the vendors, and then grab dessert from Isaac, and step in and listen to music. The artists again are.
They're C. Scott Fry. He opens at 5:30. Then 6:00, we've got Tony Tang, and 6:30, 5:00, Charlie. Who's also Brian Sullivan.
Outstanding. Okay, so that's Food Truck Friday. Mm-hmm. Isaac, thank you so much for bringing along the samples. I think I can live now. I'm going to play a little of that fine blues guitar by our Justin Smith, the artist out at Gustavus. And remember, this weekend is Gustavus' 100th birthday. So step on the ferry Saturday and take a trip out there. Come back Sunday. Talk over Justin here and tell you that you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on a set of translators throughout the area. In the Valley and Auk Bay, you can tune K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, we're on K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus hears us on K201 AM. It's 88.1 megahertz. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. And Excursion Inlet in Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. KRNN can be heard on digital channel 872. And KXLL can be found on 873. We're also online at www.ktoo.org. So Monday on Juneau Afternoon, we'll be getting details on a magic show that's Monday night. Farrell Dillon is coming to town to do that. We'll talk with Christy Nami Erickson about the reopening of the Postal Contract Station downtown. Ben Court's going to drop by. A preview of his presentation Monday night on at 360 on his experiences with substance abuse. Pat Moore, been your host today. Take in Ham Radio Field Day out at Hagavik Fire Training Center, and be sure, if you decide to grab the ferry that's running over, the special ferry run over to Gustavus for the Gustavus birthday party.